Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. Hello, my name is Demetrius. This is Jason.
Morning, everyone.
And you are listening to Spaces Podcast Express. Thank you for coming back, everybody. This past Friday, I had a presentation on a new project that I'm working on. And the space is actually kind of interesting. It's 21 feet wide. This is a commercial project. 21 feet wide, about 70 feet deep.
Ooh, that's a tunnel.
Yeah. So it's just under 1,500 square feet.
What's the space itself?
This is just a shell building right now. And what's going in there is sort of a community space, sort of like a small WeWork type facility. Gotcha. Okay. So what they want, program-wise, what they wanted to include are a couple areas for training, try and do some private offices, some open office area. What else? And lounge, and kind of get that sort of cool WeWork type vibe in there.
Gotcha.
But you know, it's 21 feet. It's like the width of a two-car garage. Yeah. And at 70 feet deep with no windows on the side or the rear.
For context, that's like 3.5 deep garages.
Yeah.
Basically. So one two-car garage wide by 3.5. So just so you can kind of mentally picture that. That's a tunnel.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's what I was working with. And when you go through that process of working out a design for someone, what I wanted to talk about today is that the way that you develop a design is you're working through this long process of all these different concepts and things and trying to address all these different issues of programs and how things relate to each other and how to maximize a 1x3 garage space to work efficiently and feel open, even though it's a narrow tunnel. Mm-hmm. So you're balancing all these things and trying to figure out, you know, how you work out that design and accomplish what they're looking for. Then you go through this process, develop design. I was able to come up with 4 different concepts, surprisingly.
And
end up doing a presentation on Friday, and it is a nerve-wracking experience going through that whole thing. And you lay your heart and soul out and what you think is good, you present to someone and they either shoot it down or they love it. And it's such a like roller coaster moment of when you're trying to present something to somebody. And we went through this a lot in school, so I guess it gets you kind of used to it, but or they try to get you used to it. But it's
like real world experience.
It's nothing you get used to, really, is putting yourself out there and letting someone else judge your work and your quality of work. So you're trying to deliver this whole presentation and just waiting for what they're going to say. So wanted to talk a little bit about that, the thought of imposter syndrome, and touch on the construction side, kind of how that experience relates.
Well, I think it's interesting. Like, if you look at it from the concept of this, right? Like, for one, you know, cheers to you. It's no different really than sales. You know, you're putting yourself out there and being willing to get shot down over and over and over again, right? It may be an issue with what you're doing, but most of the time it's just a perceived issue with what the customer wanted, even though they can't actually articulate what that is. And the main reason is it's been well documented. I don't have any studies to talk, but we probably research it and put some stuff up. But about 95% of people do not have the ability to 3D model in their mind. Mm-hmm. They are unable to view something on paper in a 2D drawing and 3D it in their mind and come up with an actual design. So the only way to actually do that, which is great for people like yourself and, you know, in your field and then me that has that ability, they need us to go and say, okay, give me an idea. Hmm. So because they can't create it on their own, the only thing they can really do is say, no, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
Because they can't actually tell you what they want.
Yeah.
You follow what I'm saying? So it's almost impossible. So it's almost like the first interaction should be more of, hey, I have no idea what I want. And I don't mean to like shred your stuff to all hell, mm-hmm. but the only way we're going to get there is for you to do something and then me to tweak it from there, because I don't really know what I want yet. And you're going to help me do that.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these interactions would be easier if we did that. But from your perspective and from what I've dealt with, I mean, even from just basic stuff, from cabinet design to flooring layouts and all that other kind of stuff, nobody has a clue of what they really want. They just see something and go, oh, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And then, so then you look at them and go, okay, well, what were you thinking? I don't know, just draw something else up, yeah. right? I mean, tell me you haven't heard this 100 times.
No, right? The thing about that is that your pushback on fees for schematic design.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to yeah. spend a lot of money on this, but yeah. I want you to do a lot more because I don't know what I want.
100%, right? And so I think the people that end up finding the value is, you know, the difference I think that I get to have is I get a lot of repeat business, right? So I start to understand what each builder partner likes. Mm-hmm. And so I can kind of guesstimate, hey, you're not really going to want this here. You're going to want this like this. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or whatever it is, as opposed to you kind of, for the most part, are going to get one hit wonders, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a job at a time and until at some point, you know, you land in with some people that are constantly turning stuff. So I get a little bit of an advantage from there because of the repeatability we have with product and accounts. But you're 100% correct. They don't know what it is. They don't really know how to value that time. And to be honest with you, in their brain, they don't want to rationalize the value for that time because they don't want to pay you. But they don't want to just tell you, I don't really want to pay you. They want to say, I don't understand that. And you already drew it, so just tweak it. It shouldn't take that long, right? It's kind of the other thing you get, right? You're laughing. Uh-huh. But that's what we're dealing with. So I think the hardest thing is at the beginning is to really try and flush out as much as we can about what they want to see. And then in the sales portion of it, which is essentially what you're doing on that first pitch going back to them, is bring them back into that same conversation. This is what you asked for. You know what I mean? This is not bluntly like that, right? But basically saying, okay, so when you're talking about this, you were describing this. So that's what I did here. They're going to be less apt to shoot down their own idea than they are to shoot down your idea. You follow what I'm saying? It's a lot easier to fight with you than it is to fight with myself. Not a big fan of that, right? Yeah. So, you know, it becomes a little bit of that you have to learn how to do that. And that's only through experience time and time and time again. That's a sales process. And that's why I tell everybody all the time, you need to understand marketing, you need to understand sales, because you use it every single day, no matter what you think, right? If you're really in business for your own, or you're running that side of a business. But dude, we run into issues like that all over. I mean, even like on a flooring layout concept, it's pretty basic. You're installing stone. Somebody wants a border. You know, I did a master bath that comes to mind for a VIP of ours. Mm-hmm. And I went over it with our installer. In all of my years of doing this, and all of my installer's years of doing it, which is double what I have, we looked at it and said, yeah, this is the right way to lay it out for the space. About 2/3 of the way done with it, the partner sees it. It's like, I don't like this cut right here. And I'm like, okay. But that cut's there because of the way this whole thing's laid out. And it's actually laid out on the visual of you walking into the bathroom. But he's looking at the back right corner. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm like, yeah, but if you're going to bury a cut, you want, well, this is where I'm going to step into the shower. This is what I'm going to see. I'm like, no, you're going to see it. So it becomes this argument, right? Back and forth. And really what it was is I could have probably alleviated all that if I would have came and said, hey, here's how we're going to lay it out. This is what we're going to do. Now, I'm not going to argue with them. And basically we end up replacing it because it's not worth having a pissing match over all the other business we do with the people. But those are the things that you learn. And it makes zero sense to anybody in the industry. Zero.
Yeah.
Nobody would have done it the way they're asking you to do it. So nobody would even have thought about that. But it's not about how I think about it. It's not about how our installer thinks about it. It's about what the customer ultimately wants, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can look at it from the perspective of I failed there to say, hey, this would have taken another 20 minutes. Here's how we're going to do this. You good? It's going to give you roughly a smaller cut over here than here and whatever it is. But I didn't do that. So at least I can reconcile with the fact that I could have played it better and I learned for next time. But that goes right back to your point. It's like, who the hell would have ever thought of that? It makes no sense. It still makes no sense. I've been to that house and I've seen the install and it still pisses me off because it looks dumb to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. But and the funny part is you'd think if, and this is where you'd look at it, if any other architect or whatever walked into this project that you didn't agree with, but your name's on it. You're like, yeah, but that's what they wanted. Yeah, but it looks dumb. I know, but that's what they wanted. You know what I mean? Like this kind of thing back and forth. But you get in these, it almost becomes an argumentative point because they can't see what they want. But then when you show them something, it's very easy. I saw this picture one time and it was of these, is it like a motivational picture? And it was all these pencils that were all sharp, right? But then there was one dull one, right? And like the one that had been used. And it said, it's always easy to appear sharp if you've never done any work. And I was like, oh my God, like that's a lot of what it is, right? So you can easily be like, this is what I want. And you can easily be like, this is what I always thought I was going to get when you've never done anything before. After you've already seen the work somebody else did, it's like the ultimate Monday morning quarterback, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, my part's different. We do a lot of these things just because it's a business thing. You're doing it because obviously it's your business and that's how you make your money. Yeah. So it's hard to have that argument about back and forth and all those other kind of things. Because if you come in saying, hey, there's going to be three different revisions and you bill for that up front, they're going to say you're too expensive and take the other guy before you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the interesting thing that I wanted to expand on that you mentioned is the hard part about this whole industry is that we've all dealt with going through these processes for years now and have developed some level of experience. And yeah, you're working with clients. So I often try to, you know, explain why I did things a certain way. And like you mentioned, I'm addressing certain things that the client mentioned. So I kind of walk through that whole process and try to paint that picture. But again, like you said, ultimately they're the ones that are going to have to live there and work there. So whatever they want is what's going to happen. But the funny thing is, you know, you get a lot of pushback, and we'll have to get on this in another episode in a longer conversation specifically to this, but you get a lot of pushback on fees and you're trying to squeeze things in. And often architects shoot themselves in the foot. They fall into the category of overextending and doing work for free, essentially, because they really care about the project and they want to make sure the client's happy. So they often end up doing things for free and losing out on time and money. But ultimately, on the back end, the client's like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I'm so happy. I couldn't even value what you gave to me. But you're like, but you were valuing it earlier.
Or devaluing.
You're devaluing it earlier. And there was a specific amount that you wanted to spend. But then on the back end, you're like, I couldn't even say how much I would be willing to spend for what you came up with. So there's this weird relationship.
It's hard. And, you know, I've been doing the things that I'm doing in my capacity now for probably 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I can share with you, there's a recent builder partner we started a partnership with. And to be honest with you, I was super excited about, you know, family owned company, been doing things a lot of different ways, just a lot of really good people. And, you know, long story short, to your point, asked for more, I conceded this and that, whatever. And it's been a constant grind and grind and grind and grind. And I can tell you for the first time in 15 years, I told that partner, look, you know what? I'm done. Like, I can't give you this anymore. I'm not doing any more for it. You're devaluing everything my team's doing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm done. You know, and they're kind of like, I can't believe it's come to this. I'm like, neither can I. I'm like, so either we find a middle ground on this and here's where I'm willing to go, or I will help you transition out. It's the first time in my entire career I've ever even considered doing that. Wow. Because so I think everybody's finally got their tipping point. And dude, let's be honest, or I'll be honest, it could be just with everything going on where I'm emotionally like this, and that could very well be a part of it. But very rarely does it get there, because I think everybody has their threshold of what's enough. And so if you can see it's like, I need this to accomplish this, or we want to be able to do this or this, fine, and you're willing to go to that. And for the most part, it probably usually works out okay. Does it feel great? Not necessarily. Did you get out what you needed, or, you know, your minimum, maybe, what you hope for? Probably not. But every so often you'll get those too. And so it's a hard push, because it's a grind. And like, let's look at it. Like, I know I'm a subcontractor. I work for a subcontractor. You know what I mean? And no matter what they do, there's two things that are supposed to happen when you're a subcontractor. You can't ever fail. Because the builder partner will use that against you. I'm doing kind of a generalized term. And they want it for as cheap as they can possibly get it. And I'm going to quote a line from a movie called Pool Hall Junkies, great movie. Christopher Walken was in. I don't know if you ever saw it. And there's a scene where Christopher Walken and the main guy, I don't know who he is, were talking, and he goes, I figured it out a long time ago. Employers will only pay employees so much as they won't quit, and employees will only work as so much as they won't get fired. Now, fundamentally, that makes sense. Do I really think it's that way? God, I hope not. But I think there's a little bit of that that goes on, right? Like your builder partner, your client is trying to negotiate and get things for as cheap as they possibly can, or spend as least amount of money on it as they have to. You're trying to negotiate to the other side to get as much money for your service and value your service as you possibly can. And that's going to be in the middle somewhere. You're going to come to an agreement. Nobody's ever going to give you this, and you're not ever going to take this. You know what I mean? Unless there's some other play behind it. So I thought it was, you know, that's business. And so I think the thing that I've learned to do is, for the most part, I've been able to separate, for the most part, business from me or personal or whatever it is, right? It's not that they're devaluing me, even though it feels like it. They're devaluing, or they're trying to negotiate from their side to do their job the best they can, which then I think you can kind of respect that, unless it's just completely off the wall, which in this other situation was totally off the wall and not fair. And once it hits that point, I'm like, well, then I don't really want to do business with you anyway. You know what I mean? But, and we were able to work it out. You know, we were able to work it out. And I think sometimes people are going to push only so far as they realize you're about to break. And I was at my point where I'm like, this is it. So dude, it's a struggle, because nobody understands your job like you do, right? Otherwise they'd be doing it. And in fairness for your project, you're not laying out the cash that these guys are laying out to try and make this thing happen. So as long as we can try and understand, just like some of the other conversations you and I had, that conversation about trying to understand each other's sides, you know what I mean? And come to the middle on that. That's really what we're trying to do as a group. When we get into the room, we start negotiating on projects and design and all those other kind of things, but it's hard to remember that.
Yeah. And then one thing I wanted to kind of finish up on is the thought of imposter syndrome. Someone mentioned this to me or asked me about it before, but I think that's part of the presentation process and delivering a concept to a client. There's this level. Are you familiar with imposter syndrome?
I was going to ask you to define that.
So it's essentially this feeling of you are not what you are presented.
Gotcha.
And you're going to be identified as a fraud of whatever you're doing.
Sure.
And I think there's a level of that to creative work and service work in some cases. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the anxiety also comes from in a presentation. And someone asked me about how do you ever get over that? And I wanted to catch your quick thought before you finish. But in my mind, I don't think you ever, what I said was, I don't think you ever get over that. It's always just, I think it's part of human nature. They talked about historically, like when the reason you freak out during public speaking is it was also always a scene where you were trying to convince a group to not kill you. And it's sort of this instinctual thing of when you're speaking in front of people, you're trying to survive. And I think that's just an instinctual thing. When you're presenting and putting yourself out there, it's a stressful situation. I don't think it's anything that anyone ever really gets over, but it's just a matter of kind of convincing yourself to push through and just deliver it, because you're there for a reason. And you just get through the wall and just make it happen.
That's an interesting topic. I would challenge that you do get over it. And the reason I would say that is because I think there's two things that really weigh in on getting you to that point. I mentioned sales before, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I always told people it's some of the best training to be in retail, where you actually have to work on commission, which I don't know how you do that anymore in California, but you work on commission, or be in like food service, like a waiter or waitress, right? Because of this, I think the two things that trump it are education. And I'm not talking about formal education. It's about understanding what it is you're doing, right? That's an education every single day. And being one of the best in your industry and never relying on just who you are and expecting people to lay over for that, right? So you have the education part of it that starts first. And the second part is just experience, which is part of the education. So the more you get in there and you get into a room and you feel comfortable about really being a master at what you do, really being the subject matter, you know, expert at what you do, really believing that because you put in the time, those are all confidence builders. That doesn't mean that you're not going to get challenged. But the other thing that I think you got to become comfortable with is when somebody asks you a question, not believing you have to have the answer.
So, and that's something I struggled with all, up until the last probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought I had to know it all when I was going in there to say it. Not, I didn't know it all, but I was really trying to like pay attention to get the information, to understand what they're looking for and nail it. Right. And that's not true, because they're going to ask you different things because they don't understand it like you do, and you don't understand it like them. So I would also throw in learn psychology and study psychology is super important, which is marketing. And, but what happens is when you go in there and someone asks you a question, there's an unbelievable amount of power and honesty in going in and telling that person, great question. I don't know, but I'll find out and I'll get back to you. And that does two things. One, they know you're not bullshitting them anymore. Mm-hmm. Two, they know you're willing to accept the fact you don't know it all and you're willing to listen to what it is they're looking for. And three, then you're willing to show your follow-up and your ability to come back and give them an answer to something that they were asking you. So it provides those three different things. So I would tell you, educate yourself and become best in class. Just become best in class at what you do, right? And work hard on that so you can look in the mirror and know that that's what you do. That's a confidence builder. Two, get out there and do it. You're going to burn. You're going to fail. You're going to do whatever. But even tell them up front, hey, I haven't done this a whole lot, but I'm, you know, here's what I'm looking at, blah, blah, blah. You, people for the most part are empathetic and they're willing to do that. And then three, be willing to say, I don't know. Don't have to have the answer for everything. You need to know the basic stuff, but you can't know what everybody's going to look for every single time and have those notes and see them take down those notes and whatever it is, whether it's on your phone or people love people writing stuff down on pen and paper. So I think when you do those things, it will grow, but you're not somebody that doesn't care and only thinks what your concept is right. It'll grow to people understanding that you're about their needs. And so I think that imposter syndrome starts to go away. The only reason why I think there's imposter syndrome is because you actually feel like you're an imposter. You're trying to be something you're not, which is the first failure step you're going to find. So if anybody ever calls me out, go, I can't believe you don't know that. I'm like, yeah, solid point. What are you going to say now? I mean, what are they going to do? I'm not going to fight it. It's wrong. Here's what we can do to fix it. They're not going to yell at me anymore. Mm-hmm. They're really not. You know what I mean? And they realize also too, I'm earning their respect because I'm not saying, no, you're wrong. Like this is how it's supposed to be when clearly that shouldn't be how it is. So yeah. I think you do those things and you're good. The people that are afraid of imposter syndrome, I think are the ones that haven't been willing to do those three things, or at least a couple of those three things, and feel like they have to have that.
I agree. I agree with everything you said, but I don't
stop there then.
But I don't know that, I don't agree that, imposter syndrome is simply that you haven't done those things. I think it's sort of something that's inside of just nerves, which is if you don't have the nerves, more often than not, you don't care. And okay. I think if you really care, you have those nerves. And sometimes that leads to, I really want to reach these high levels. And it's like, I don't know if I can reach those high levels yet, or I don't know if I've reached or if I can reach those high levels, but I have high expectations of delivering something that's flawless. And like you said, it's very difficult to be flawless and you don't know everything, but.
But I think that goes back to one of the main points. I would say that person that you're describing at this point doesn't have a lot of experience in doing it yet.
Let's pick this up another time because we're running super long.
All right. Whatever you say.
So we'll cut for today. We'll pick back up on imposter syndrome some other time, maybe cool. In our next Tuesday episode. For now, we will call this and then chat with you on Thursday. Thank you for joining us.
See you guys.
This show is part of the Gable Media Network. You can check out similar content at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. You can help support what we're doing here by leaving a 5-star rating and a review on your preferred podcasting app. It helps others find us, and your support is the only way that this show grows. And don't forget to connect with us through our Facebook community, Instagram, and see the random thoughts and articles that we share on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you again for spending some time with us. Talk soon.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually in putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story and we are here to tell it.